All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, this is Tony's Political Ramblings. So today I wanted to talk about a little bit more about privacy. I've touched on it in the past in different episodes. It's been a supplementary piece on a few other episodes. But today I really wanted to key in on a particular aspect of it by looking at the specific technologies that have been put forth and made widespread and publicly available by private firms that are really creating a lot of issues in terms of personal privacy. These are going to include things like smart speakers, Siri on iPhones, for example, as well as Google Home, Google Nest, the Ring doorbells that have the video features where you can monitor your front porch, back porch, however many porches you may like to monitor. You could have Ring videos watching it, or Ring cameras watching it. And so I'm really going to key in on, like I said, the Amazon Alexa, the Google Home slash Nest, and then the Ring videos for this. Look at what the technology, how it's being used by both private and public sector actors, and what that means for you in the long term. And my thoughts on the sort of culture that this sort of surveillance of personal space and personal data creates. So I'm going to start with the Amazon Alexa, because that's something that's, as far as I can tell, one of the more popular ones of the bunch. Now, and the Amazon Alexa, obviously there are different names, Amazon Echo, you know, any of those other names that they call them, Amazon Echo Dot, whatever. It's the same Amazon Alexa technology. It's a, this is from Amazon's website. It's a sort of, it's an assistant type situation where you say what they call wake words, and the wake, in this case, the wake word would be Echo, computer, Alexa, you know, Amazon, what have you, and then the microphone catches those words and sees that you are asking it something, and then listens to what you're saying and responds to it accordingly. That's fundamentally how the technology works. What's interesting about this is that I took a look at Amazon's website, is that they don't really say how it works. They do say that the Amazon Alexa software, the technology, is not recording or quote listening to you when it has not been activated by the wake words, things like Alexa. You know, but if you say something like Lexus or Nexus or some other word that sounds like Alexa, sometimes there'll be an accidental awakening of it. And they say, let me see, what do they liken it to? It's similar to when a person walking down the street turns their head when they hear what sounds like their name. Fair enough. All's well and good there. And, you know, in principle, the technology sounds fine, but the website doesn't really give any clear indication on how it works. And that's something that I find a little confusing, a little suspect. But that my suspicions are sort of confirmed as time goes on. When you look at different pieces of data and cases where Amazon Alexa and Amazon Echo recording data was used in court cases in the United States. So this gets a little murky, as in 2017, in the murder trial of Victor Collins, James Bates was a man who was charged of murdering him, but upon looking at and listening to, rather, the Amazon Echo recordings, the charges against Mr. Bates were dismissed because there was, quote, there was nothing incriminating on the recording. And so in conjunction with that, and by checking his iPhone Steps apps, which recorded, you know, any movement, you know, is any, you know, any step you take, your iPhone tracks what your movements are. And so they found that the iPhone had not shown any movement since he went to bed until he never moved the phone until the morning when he woke up, which lined up with the Amazon recording, and it lined up with what his testimony was. And so when you look at that piece of the equation, it makes it a little more suspicious as to how this Amazon technology works, the Alexa technology. And so And a lot of this gets tricky because a lot of these software companies, a lot of what they're doing is proprietary, because they don't want other companies to know how it works, so they can't rip it off. And that's a fair point. If you are Amazon, Google, what have you, you want to keep your information yours, so that no one else can make a cheap imitation. Because you know, odds are, you know, Amazon spent a lot of money to develop this technology, and they want to reap all the financial benefit from it. But it also makes it very difficult and confusing, and a little, you know, it ruffles the feathers of some of their customers, because nobody knows how it works exactly. And it hasn't, you know, it's one of those situations where the people aren't necessarily informed when they have this speaker and microphone that's sitting in their homes, listening, but maybe not recording, but always hearing at all times of the day. And so the next piece of that I wanted to get into was the Google Home / Nest. And this section is a little bit shorter, but it touches on a very important piece of this as well. Google in 2019, from what it looks like, was busted for taking snippets of recordings without people's consent and using them to improve the software of the Google Home by decoding and better understanding what people are saying and their voice commands. To better understand the voice commands that are coming to the Google Home, they are using the conversations that are being recorded. Now, Google said that, like, yes, we need this in order to provide a better service. And again, that's true, but you're still listening to people's conversations that, again, before 2019, from what it looks like, they weren't informed that you were listening to their conversations. Again, supposedly, this is from The Independent in the UK, Google said that in a blog post defending the practice, its language analysts only review about 0.2% of audio recordings. But as we all know from the current pandemic, 0.2% of a very large population is still a significant amount of data. It sounds small, but really, when you think of how many people have these Google Nests and Google Homes in their homes, that's a lot of information. And so it's a little, and the same thing is true of Amazon. I'll link an article to this in the references section, that Amazon does listen to some of these conversations and some of these recordings in order to better, in order to make the Alexa software more efficient, more accurate, and improved overall. And on that front, it helps. So that's the sort of private sector watchers of this data. And you have the public being the U.S. courts and the police departments increasingly. And that brings me to the third and final technology I want to look at, which is the Ring doorbells. Now, again, for those of you who aren't familiar, those are the doorbells with the little cameras in them that keep an eye on someone's front porch all the time. And Ring is as a company, has worked with over 2,000 police and fire departments in the year 2020 and 2021. So that's a lot. However, you know, you'd think that this idea of watching your front porch would sort of deter people from breaking in or trying to rob, but it doesn't really help. NBC News, in fact, did a report in early 2020, before the pandemic took hold, of 40 different police departments across the United States. Oh, sorry, law enforcement agencies across 8 states. And there's, quote, little concrete evidence to support Ring's claims that they promised to have safer neighborhoods and deterring and helping solving crimes. The Ring software just doesn't do that. And in particular, they look at Winter Park in Florida, which is a part of Orlando that's a little more affluent. And they had, you know, the whole pitch when they released the promotional video was that, yes, we have this in Winter Park and it works. It prevents crimes from happening and it increases our ability to arrest people based on this evidence that we're seeing. And at the time of the article being written in February of 2020, a whole 2 years after Ring was implemented by the police department, the Winter Park Police Department had not made a single arrest that was aided by the Ring footage. So it doesn't really help, but it's just another way that Ring, a company by owned by Amazon, by the way, is able to sell units into wealthier suburban areas. And so now that I've gone over three of these different pieces of technology, the Amazon Alexa software, the Google Home / Nest, and the Ring doorbell recording apparatus, I suppose, I think it's important to comment, and I think the culture that this sort of creates, this culture of constant monitoring and constant collection of data by private entities in particular. You know, Google and Amazon, they're private entities, and they have they're not really in the business of benefiting people. They're in the business of selling more units. So that's why they will go ahead and take, Google will take snippets of conversations and use that to better train their AI. And Amazon will do the same. And again, and in the case of Ring, they're able to sell to things like police departments and increase their coverage in wealthier suburban areas because it helps Ring make money fundamentally. So on the private end, there's really, again, the profit incentive is still there. Even if this technology doesn't really serve to benefit you in a significant way, even like the Ring video, like the Ring doorbells, there's still a profit motive that underlies all of this. And when you go to the public sector, you have police departments, again, you know, who have been under much scrutiny in the United States as of late, who have access to people's to footage of people's front doors all the time. And in these more severe, high-profile murder cases, like the one I mentioned earlier in this episode, Amazon typically pushes back when their Alexa software is called to be a witness, as it were. But they have to turn it over to the government if the government asks for it, and if a court of law asks for it, if they're subpoenaed. So it has to come over. And so I think it's a troubling sort of situation where, in my eyes, as individual data, private moments in your own home, you know, with your family, with your pets, whoever, you know, become and get sent out to private companies or, you know, your local police department if you seem to get crossed up in some sort of crime. You know, it's things that are happening in your own home that are being shipped out to Amazon's cloud and stored for training Amazon's AI, or being used in some trial, or being used to catch and identify a suspect in a crime. You know, this information is private, at least until it's no longer private. And I think it's a tricky line that I think we have to work on as a society to decide, you know, what is private and what is public and what can be sent out to the private companies who operate these services and what can be saved for individuals. And I haven't even scratched the surface with this. This goes well beyond these smart speakers and these video surveillance systems that are increasingly common. This applies to cell phone company providers. This applies to social media. Direct messages on Facebook, for example, or text messages, are those private, or do the companies who provide them have their own incentive on using them for whatever reason, whatever purposes they may need? And does the government have access to these forms of communication that otherwise may feel private? And I think it's an interesting line to move, and it's an interesting question to look at as time goes on and as more and more of this technology develops and advances and becomes more efficient. And I think it's important for us to remember that just because we may not have something to hide doesn't mean we need to turn over every last piece of information about our personal lives.